every day is a moment of clarity for the melanated folk, either waiting for your reasoning to reject our humanity or witnessing yet another death by your hands. These are the beginning words of a poem that was written by today's guest. The poem is entitled Creases Expelled from the Fold by Khadija Z. Ali Coleman. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk, and very pleased to introduce today's guest, Khadija Z. Ali Coleman. Hello, Khadija. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Pamela? Great to be here.
I am doing fine, but I have to tell you, I'm really quite impressed. You are described as a multimedia strategist, a professional creative who has built an expansive interdisciplinary career as a professional in higher education, media, student development, and the arts. So let me take a breath for a second and help us understand what you do with only a 24-hour day.
Well, I, of course, I have to be very adept at using my calendar, right?
Indeed.
And I actually say that a lot with clients and students, that to be able to do as much as you want to do, you really have to. What does Maxine Waters say? Reclaim your time. Be organized with your time. And so I discovered very early on as a young college student, and especially when I entered college, that there were so many things that that were in my purview I didn't even know before I got into college. And realized that I just want to do a lot of things, and I want to make impact in a way that makes the world better than I found it or that we imagine is possible. And so currently I have a few brands that I operate through, but they are holistically joined by this common thread of possibility, creativity, and just being able to actualize what you imagine. And so when you say interdisciplinary, that was my major in college at UMBC, and I've begun to realize that that's a theme of my life.
Khadija, let me just interrupt you for a second. UMBC is what and where?
Oh, UMBC is the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, located in Maryland. So okay. It's one of the University of Maryland campuses.
Okay.
And so I graduated from there as an undergraduate student, and that was my major. And I had the ability to actually create my major. I had to be approved. I had to create a program and have it approved. And that was my first introduction to the word interdisciplinary. And my program was African American Studies and Mass Media. And from there, that really has been a word that has illustrated the type of life that I'm trying to lead, interdisciplinary.
You know, you've said a couple of things that I think are so important to underscore. The first thing that you said that really struck me was the need to plan when there are a lot of things that you want to do, because so many people live their lives being sort of cluttered, if you will, with the things that they tell themselves they have to do. So there's just such a different sort of internal balance when you're aware of the fact that you're doing the things that you want to do for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you said that I thought was really important, particularly for students entering into a higher education environment, is that you created your course of study. You had to get it approved,
yeah,
but you created it. So there is a way to sort of step outside of the box while being inside of the box, if you will, to make happen what is important to you.
Exactly. And I speak to middle schoolers and high schoolers, because when you think of college, you know, a lot of people in that age bracket, young people in that age bracket, when, you know, I've been in school so long, I don't even want to go to more school, because they look at college as being another prescriptive program of study. But I would encourage students, high school students looking for schools, if they are really aware of what it is that they want to study, looking at schools that offer a program such as it may be called interdisciplinary studies, it may be called something else, but some type of department that allows you to curate your education. That's what I look at it as, being a curation of what it is that you want to study. I initially, before I even knew that that was something that existed, I knew I was interested in film. I knew that whatever I studied had to be from an African-American perspective, because public school was so often Eurocentric in terms of approach. And I know that when I got to college that I wanted to be able to approach education from a perspective, because as an African-American woman, I wanted from a perspective of my experience. And so when I got to UMBC and saw interdisciplinary studies was an option, it just, I mean, it was very mind-opening, and it allowed me to really go about, as I said earlier, journey approaching things in an interdisciplinary study even after graduating.
Khadijah, let's back up to where you were born and what your early experiences were like growing up.
Okay. Well, I was born in Washington, D.C., in a hospital that is no longer around, but it's so funny when I meet fellow Washingtonians, people who were born in Washington, D.C. Many of them were born in the Columbia Hospital for Women. I lived in Washington, D.C. until maybe the age of 5 before my mother moved us to Montgomery County. And so my childhood growing up was split between living in both Montgomery County, Maryland, and Prince George's County, Maryland. And for many of your listeners, Prince George's County, Maryland, is one of the most affluent, one of the counties in the country where proportionally there's more affluent Black people living in this county. So Montgomery County, my experience living there, it was more diverse in terms of ethnicities, nationalities, people with different backgrounds. Prince George's County, Maryland, was an experience where encountered more Black people of different socioeconomic backgrounds. And so my experience growing up was very eye-opening in terms of just the experience of different people that live here in America. My mother and father, when I was born, my parents were part of the Nation of Islam. And so that's where I got my very Muslim name, Khadijah Ali Coleman. And I was raised with a very conscious approach to learning. My mother was a mathematician and an educator, and I was reading books from Chancellor Williams and Frantz Fanon when she would do my hair at 8 years old, and reading books that I had no idea what they were talking about, but it really built my vocabulary. And ultimately, as I got older, being able to have a sense of personhood that I think when some students get to college, that's when they start to have self-actualization. But when I got to college, I had that, but I wanted to go further and go deeper. And so many of the things that the brands and the work that I do in a community is really to help. I really feel that I'm on a mission to help people find what it is that resonates with who they are, soul level wise. And I really attribute a lot of that to my mother and who she was, for better or for worse, because we had some challenges. But she really started me young with going deeper in terms of who I was as a person and who we are as a people, as Black people in America.
What would you say that you learned about being a girl growing up? It sounds like you had lots of opportunities to grow and explore. What did it mean to be a girl in your home as a little one?
It's so interesting that you asked me that question, because only now have I really just sat in it and sat with that. because a lot of it is unspoken. But what I realize, and even as I share with you about my mother, she's a mathematician, and I start with that. And when my mother passed away in 2014, but when we talk about her, how smart she was, how much she knew things, I think that was a message that I grew up with. And so it always revolved around intelligence, what you know, and more so than looks. Like, even only now do I feel that I'm really getting into fashion and things like that. But as a girl, I really was attached to what is it that allows me to express myself and to be myself. And I learned early that that was the arts for me. That was writing, that was community organizing, that was and community organizing as a child looks like gathering your friends to create something, whether it's a play, whether it's, whether it's a song, creating music, but gathering people. And it could be around some type of social justice issue, but it's using the arts to express a message. And so that's what growing up for me revolved around. And it was just was. I'm the oldest of five children, mostly girls, one boy. And that was the predominant message that I got growing up.
What do you think you learned about men growing up, particularly Black men?
Well, I had the privilege of growing up. Unfortunately, my siblings didn't have this experience, but I grew up with my grandfather. And he was, to me, the epitome of all that is good with Black men. He was nurturing. He was inspirational. He was my biggest cheerleader. When I was in college, he would drive. This man was in his 80s. He would drive from Alexandria, Virginia, to Baltimore, Maryland. And for those who aren't familiar with our area, that's at least a 60-mile drive up a highway. At 86, to give me money after talking to me on the phone, and he could always tell when I was lying. If he asked me, "Are you okay? You have money?" And I was like, "Yes, yes." And here I get a call from the front desk. Your grandfather's here. What? He was that type of person. He was always looking out for me. So I had that experience. And so that kind of really shaped how I looked at relationships that I had with men, interacting with men. I experienced the positive side, so I knew that was possible. So bad experiences with men never colored that this is it, because I had a positive experience with my grandfather.
You know, it is so true that the early experiences that we have a powerful impact on what we believe about ourselves and others, and certainly what we come to expect in terms of relationships. What did you learn about the world outside of your home as you were a little one growing up? Did you have the sense that you were socially aware, politically savvy as a child could be, or was that shielded from you?
I had a very interesting experience, I would say, because as I am a Black woman, I am light-skinned, and I had experiences, and I think it's important to say, so when I grew up in Montgomery County, Maryland, very diverse, where you have many immigrants from different countries of the world, and during the time that I lived in Montgomery County in the 80s, we had a strong influx of people coming from Ecuador, Nicaragua, El Salvador. These are my classmates, different countries in Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. And so I experienced, interestingly enough, a lot of positive experiences, but many discriminatory experiences from people who thought that I was from another country, Spanish-speaking country. And experienced a lot of vitriol from people of from American people of different races, telling me to go back to my country, telling me I got accused of stealing when I was in sixth grade because I looked like somebody else that they thought I was, and my mother had to advocate on my behalf. Having experiences like that. And so when I, as an adult and being an advocate, I feel, for all people, but particularly those who are disenfranchised and oppressed, I feel like it's not just from an Afrocentric perspective, but also from people of color, because a lot of times I am perceived as being someone who is not from the African diaspora only, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. What did your family say to you about those experiences? Clearly, they were unable to shield you from the world around you.
Well, ironically, my mother, so both of my parents are Black, or my mother, however, was very ethnically ambiguous in how she looked. And so she, to the point where different people of different ethnicity who were Spanish speaking would just begin to speak Spanish speaking with her. And we would travel and we would go to countries, I think of Mexico in particular, where people just thought she was from there. And so she shared a lot of her experiences from growing up, and just in terms of being accepted, being rejected. I think what was most hurtful for her was being rejected from other Black people or by other Black people because of the way that she looked. And so that really helped shape the messages that and just sharing her experiences, keeping us mindful of how it's necessary to just really be aware of how people perceive us and make assumptions of our experiences based on how we look. And it's by people of all, Black people, white people, always had some kind of misconception because of the way that we look.
So that would make it a complicated growing up, I would think, on several levels. Perhaps even with a sense of wanting to fit and maybe not knowing where you fit.
Often, I don't, you know, for me, I hear the word a lot, identity politics. And I don't approach things too much from that perspective, if that makes any sense. You don't have to look like me, or I don't have to look like you to have empathy for you. You don't have to have a certain social economic background for me to empathize with you. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
But I do take into consideration, like, for instance, there is a difference between someone of a different socioeconomic class who's wealthy, basically, expecting to have certain things revolve around them in terms of advocacy, than for those who are disenfranchised. And so if I had to choose, I would definitely be advocating for those who are disenfranchised, those who are often silenced, those who are voiceless. And a lot of times, those are people who are of color. Those are people who are living in areas where there's either food deserts or some type of at-risk issue that's happening. And so that is really how I activate spaces and how I approach things. It's not, you've heard the saying also, all skin folk are not kin folk. And I think that that is a saying created by someone who realizes that a lot of times with identity politics, we just look at it as really superficial things that connect us to people, instead of recognizing that we have to go deeper. And when we are applying our energy to activate or advocate around issues and spaces.
Khadija Z. Ali Coleman is the creator of many entities, if you will. Liberated Muse is certainly an important one of her many creations. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, Khadija, I'm going to ask you to tell us a bit about the why and the when and the where of Liberated Muse. Khadija, just before the break, I told you that I wanted to know the why, when, and where of Liberated Muse. There's one more piece I'd like to know about, and that is the who of Liberated Muse, because it's not just one person. So start off with telling us why Liberated Muse.
Oh, I love talking about the genesis of Liberated Muse. You know, I spoke earlier how I've always been really a creative in terms of I've always loved to write. I've always sung and things like that from a small child. But it wasn't really until my 20s when I was professionally performing and making music. But in 2003, I became a mom and put a lot of those things on hold because even now, I'm like motherhood is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. But 4 years into being a mom, I realized that I didn't have to live in silo. My life didn't have to be so segmented where I had to only parent. I could also be a creative. And so in 2008, I was working at Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, and I had the assistant director of residence life there, and I was in charge of academic programming. And I had a large number of students who were in their first year not doing well academically. And so I decided to be very ambitious, and with over 200 students, I had one-on-ones with them to kind of really assess. This was my grassroots research project to find out what's going on. And I talked with these students, and many of them had begun their college experience majoring in things that their parents wanted them to do, or having no idea what they wanted to do, and really a disconnect between what they were taking courses in and where their interests lie. And for a majority of them, they were very art-centered, where they had some type of skill artistically that wasn't really an opportunity to engage in during their academic program. So I decided to create workshops and things around to assist them with academic success, but also I wrote a play that in order for them to be able to participate in, they had to participate in these workshops that would help them academically. And so this play called Shades of Black debuted in early 2008, began casting in the fall of 2007, and had over 30 students participate in this play. And this was my first play that I had ever produced. And I had written it in less than a week.
Wow.
And when, I look back and I'm like, what the heck? What happened? Like, what was going on energetically where this just happened? And the response of the students, it was just amazing. And so we presented the play in February, but before we presented it, I was also online and I was part of different online communities. And this is when around the time where I first got on Facebook, but there were also communities that were starting up using this platform called Ming. And this one community, Sojournals.com, I was a part of, inspired me to create my own online community. And that was how Liberated Muse was created. Liberated Muse, the name itself, was something that I came up with in 2002. I was going to start a band called Liberated Muse, and I got pregnant exactly 2 months later. So Liberated Muse, the band, did not happen, but that name stuck with me. And so I created the community in 2008 to really begin taking myself seriously as a creator. This play that I had created for the students really started getting my juices flowing as a playwright. And I wanted to meet other people, other like-minded people. So the digital community began to flourish. And at first, it was people I knew. It was some of my students from Morgan who joined. It was friends, people that I knew. But then, all of a sudden, this influx of people from around the world who I had never met personally. And that's when I realized I have something here. And so that first year, I in conversation with a college classmate from UMBC, and I talking, and he and I both were freelance writers for a publication in Washington, D.C. called East of the River Magazine. We were arts writers. We decided to partner, and we created the Capital Hip Hop Soul Fest, which we debuted that summer of 2008, and we did it for 3 summers. And so initially, Liberated Muse was this digital community, and offline we would create these opportunities for artists. And in 2010, I decided, because I was getting away from my own art and really providing these spaces for other artists, 2010, I made a decision that I wanted to produce more of my plays through this brand, and that's what began. And since then, produced at least 5 of my productions, and we have created, produced soundtracks. We've done benefit shows, and we've just done a host of things, including 3 anthologies, where the poem that you did an excerpt from at the start of the show is from our 3rd anthology, Creases Expelled from the Fold.
And tell us, you keep referring to we. Who's we?
So that's, thank you for asking, because the we changed. So the person that I worked with initially to do the festivals morphed into or changed from him to working with different artists that were in my play, and then finding a perfect fit of artists that I began, created a core troupe from. So LiberatedMuse.com, the digital community, and the production company morphed into Liberated Muse Arts Group, where we are now, which is a performance troupe. And it includes Coley Aziza, formerly known as Coley Williams. She's a prolific songwriter and jazz vocalist in the Washington, D.C. area, even though she's a native of New York. She is a phenomenal actress and singer. Lynn Artepe, who is a premier poet and actress. Anonymous Grooves is also known, well, she is Angela Ballard, also known as Anonymous Grooves. She's an artist based in Baltimore right now, but she was one of the early members of the digital community of LiberatedMuse.com. She was in our festivals early on, and myself. And so, and my daughter is, we call her our honorary Liberated Muse member, but she is really our intern. She does a lot of the recording, the videography, and most recently she was technical director for one of our productions that was in the Artscape Festival in Baltimore, Maryland this past summer, as well as assistant director of our production, the Page to Stage Festival at the Kennedy Center.
So clearly, your daughter is growing up in a creative environment where she gets to tap into her own creative juices.
Yes, Liberated Muse is her big, is her little sister. So Liberated Muse came about when she was only four, barely four. And so I really want this to be something that has longevity, because it would, I want her to have an option of managing Liberated Muse if it's still in existence, when, you know, she's interested. But she's definitely a creative. I homeschool her right now, but for her ninth grade year, and she's also dually enrolled at classes at a local community college at 14. But she is driven to, she wants to be a writer. And her goal right now, she wants to go to Duke Ellington School of the Arts in Washington, D.C. But she's a writer, and that it's inevitable. Her father is a music producer. And so, with you know, between the two of us, it was inevitable she was going to do something artistically.
I noticed that Liberated Muse, at least today as we speak, is all women. Was that intentional on your part?
I don't think so, but maybe. Maybe. I think it's a lot. I realize that I am very action-oriented. For those who are into astrology, I have, my chart is majority fire and air, okay? And so processing and things, I'll look back, oh my goodness, that was me working through da-da-da-da-da. And it works to my benefit a lot, because I don't get mired in the emotion a lot of things that can make you depressed. But I think, I've had experiences where I've worked on teams with males, and a lot of times been expected to do the work and not be able to make the decisions or be recognized for my contributions. And one of my first, I call myself, I had always had multiple streams of income, and I am what is it called? A serial entrepreneur. So when I, in my early 20s, I had a karaoke business. And even then, 22, I realized I had had so many experiences of being dominated by males in terms of not being, having the same space, that I created my karaoke business. It was called RJ Karaoke. And I created it knowing that it had a masculine sounding name, that I would attract, I don't know, that it would garner more respect or attention. And so when I was, I was very successful as a karaoke jockey, the short-lived work that I did. But when I would schedule things, people automatically thought I was a secretary. And even when I would go and, so I would hire men to carry my equipment for me, because this was, you know, early 90s, and so it wasn't the small MP3 players or laptop. It was big speakers, and a lot of, I would hire a male to assist me and help me with carrying my equipment, and they would always think that he was RJ, of RJ Karaoke. And I would allow it for the most part, instead of countering it, because it was a well-paying gig. But I think that wore on me. I know that wore on me. That made me feel some kind of way. And so the long answer to your short question is that I think, yes, it is intentional for Liberated Muse to be woman-centered, and to, because I work with males. We've had, I've worked with many men as instrumentalists who accompany us a lot of times, but their roles are always support, and that is intentional, yes.
Interesting. I also acknowledge that you refer to yourself as a serial entrepreneur, and it certainly sounds as though you were and you are. But talk about being a woman having, working for herself, having her own business. What have you learned from those experiences?
Well, I've learned that for the most part, it is a misconception that working for yourself is easier by any stretch of the imagination. It is not. And working for yourself is a misconception that you don't have to worry about what other people think when you work for yourself. And in fact, I feel that I've had to be more intentional with my branding and with my messages, because you are crafting the experience that people have when interacting with you, and it's very fragile. And when you work for someone else and the reputation of a place is not up to your standards or whatever, you just walk away. But you can't do that when it's your own brand, when it's in your own company. And so the growing of that company, the relationships become more intentional because it's a reflection of you. And so I really had to realize that when I'm creating these brands, these companies, these corporations, that it really has to be aligned with who I am as a person, because I don't want to have this duplicitous approach to my business and my life where it's two different things. And so a lot of everything that my companies or my organizations are extensions of who I am. And it's made me be more accountable for the messages that I share, who I am, how I live, because I know that when people are looking at whether it's my brand, The Creative Midwife, or whether it's my brand, Liberated Muse, or whether it's the work that I do as an educator, that is an extension of me. And I want it that way because I don't want to have a brand that is not authentically who I am.
As you talk about your brand, I know that there are several that you've referenced. What are some of the websites where people can get more information about your brands?
Well, my website, birdsyourcreativity.com, you can actually, it's a portal to all of the things that I do. But birdsyourcreativity.com is the website where people can find out more information, how I can provide a service to help them implement their vision as a creative. And what I like to say is that creativity isn't always the arts. It's really about approach. And so whether you are looking to be an entrepreneur in something as serious as maybe you want to provide virtual services or be an accountant or things like that, there can be a creative approach to that. And so I help folks with visioning, with implementing visions, also with any type of writing needs that folks have, whether it's copy for a website or just or self-publishing. For the most part, I'd say for the past 8 years, most of my clients have been self-publishing authors and those who are seeking to put out some type of message through a book or through some type of digital publication. And so I've done a lot of visioning work and coaching in those areas. So birthyourcreativity.com, you can go there and you can also learn about my work as an artist. I think credibility is so very important, and I think that a lot we're bombarded today with a lot of life coaches and and experts, quote unquote. But I think credibility in terms of what has been your personal experience is so important. And I think that the work that I do with folks looking for creativity coaches is supported by the work that I've done myself as a creative and as an educator. So that's the stop, birthyourcreativity.com. And to learn more about Liberated Muse Arts Group, you can visit liberatedmuse.com.
All right, Khadijah, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be back. Khadijah, you said that becoming a mother was the best thing that ever happened to you. Why? How did your life change?
Oh my goodness. How is it changing? It's nonstop. Oh my goodness. So the funny story that I tell is that when I was 28, about to turn 29, I had lost a significant amount of weight, 30 pounds. I was eating better, exercising, and I was, at the time, I was working as Assistant Director of Prevention Services at Covenant House, Washington, in Washington, D.C., and so I was doing what I loved, working with youth aged 11 to 17, programming. I was in a band. My daughter's father, my partner, was the leader of that band. I was artistically at a high, and I turned 29 in 2002 in December, and I was gonna party all the way into 30. And the next month, I was pregnant.
Oh, well,
so 2003 starts. So I like, this is the creator telling me, yes, you're going to party, but you don't know what kind of party I have planned for you. So 2003, I always look at it. My pregnancy, I was at my healthiest and my most creative. I was creative. I was writing poetry. I wrote so much poetry for this child before she was born. And so, of course, she was born during Hurricane Isabel. Of course she was. I had her at the birth care center on King Street in Alexandria, Virginia. And moments after giving birth, they were like, okay, you got to go. And I said, but you told me I have 3 hours after giving birth. I could say I was oblivious that the hurricane was approaching. And when we left, the Hurricane Isabel hit, and my first week of motherhood was no electricity, and really fumbling in the dark, literally, to take care of this baby. And I think that what a metaphor for parenthood that is, fumbling in the dark to take care of this child. And so when I talk about the best thing that's happened to me, parenting has required so much of making things up as they come, but also being accountable and responsible for an outcome that you're not sure of, and really having to walk the walk. If you're talking something, making sure that you're demonstrating. Because my child will remind me in a hot second, but you said such and such, and so... it has been just an experience of learning myself, learning about myself. As I mentioned earlier, that sometimes I can go and not really process. And if it's a situation of trauma, not allowing that to bog me down, but not really processing it, which is not necessarily a good thing. And with parenting, and with someone watching you, and with someone throwing your words back at you, reintroducing you to what you just said, is a very humbling experience. And so grateful for this. I tell my daughter all the time, thanks for choosing us. Sometimes I say it sarcastically. Sometimes I say it with much love and joy, but it's the truth, because she really has been such a sobering experience, but also such a gratifying experience. And it's such a blessing to have her in our life.
You know, it's interesting. Children can forget their homework. They can forget their chores, but they do not forget what you promised them, ever.
Oh my goodness. No, not, mm-mm. No, no, no. And this, my child, her name is Kari Isabel Soleil. No, she does not forget. And if she could record it, she would.
And she might be. In today's world, it's very easy. Let me ask you something else. You said that she's dually enrolled, she's homeschooled, and she's enrolled in a college. Tell us about that.
In the county that I live in right now, she is able to, so she was privileged. She's been off and on in the public school system. And so when she was in the public school system, she was a talented and gifted student. They have a testing process for that to determine students who are in this program. And so the community college that she's enrolled in, they have a dual enrollment program where students who are talented and gifted, or it's five criteria that allows you to take college courses if you are currently in high school. And so since she has she homeschool students in our county are still part of the system. They have to be, we have to do portfolio reviews and things like that. So even though they're not going to a public school, we are still part of the county school system, if that makes sense. And so that is what she does. So she can take no more than two courses, and she actually started yesterday for her first college schedule was yesterday. And I work with her in other areas, math, science, writing, but she's taking an English and a sociology class right now. And she is at a very advanced level of writing. She'll tell you that her favorite writers are Charlie Brooker, if you're familiar with the Black Mirror series, Charlie Brooker is out of England, but Black Mirror is a series on Netflix, very popular, and the writing is impeccable. And so that is that type of writing is where she has an interest. But she's an amazing writer, and I enjoy working with her as an educator. And I tell her that you're one of the best writers, but being her mother, I don't think she takes my feedback as seriously as if someone else were to say
Yeah, you
that.
need to import a stranger to tell her all that stuff, and she'll completely agree
Oh.
with it.
I know. It frustrates me so bad, but that is so true.
It's interesting. I mean, one of the objections that some have to homeschooling is the lack of socialization that's available to the child who's homeschooled. So it's really interesting to hear that she actually has the dual experience of homeschooling and going into a brick and mortar environment. Or is it? Is it online or is it bricks and mortar?
If she actually she was given an option, and I remember because you have to go through mandatory advising for this program, so we had to sit down actually with the registrar of the school, and she was like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to be in class," and that was really important. I was cheering from the sidelines because I am in a doctoral program right now for community college leadership, and so I know all the research that really people think online classes are easier, but they're not, because they really re require you to have initiative and self-direction. And a lot of students that don't have that come into an online class with that don't fare so well. But also because in the class it's community and things like that. So when she opted for that, I was like, yes, because I gave her the choice. But I will say about homeschooling, what you mentioned about socialization, that so I homeschooled her off and on. So she was in middle school. She was in a performing arts school in our county for 7th and 8th grade. She auditioned for it when I was homeschooling her. It was actually an assignment because I had given her an assignment of preparing an audition piece, and we. Were like I said, well, they are having auditions for this area school, and you can put your piece to practice. Well, she got into the school, and she wasn't. I wasn't telling her you have to go to this school. She wanted to, and so she was in school for 7th and 8th grade. And the group of friends that she has now from her middle school experience. But before she had started school, it really was challenging to find homeschool collectives or co-ops or just other homeschooling parents that we re really resonated with, or where there were really other girls her age, because this movement toward homeschool, you'll find that there is a lot of parents, most of the children are boys,
Well, that's
because a lot,
interesting.
our schools are not doing, a lot of our schools are doing a disservice to boys of color, particularly black boys. And so a lot of the groups that we would go, or if there'd be other homeschool students, it'd be boys. And, you know, if you know any preteens at the time, she don't want to be around all these boys. And, and her interest is in arts and writing. So I, you know, sign her up for STEM or robotics. I don't want to be here. And I don't want to be around all these boys. And so so it was definitely a challenge. And so even now, but she is a very, she likes to be around you, around people, for as long as she wants to, and then she has no problem telling me, I'm going to wait over here. I'm done interacting with folks. So she's at a level of self-actualization that I think is a bit advanced than others, and she can interact with adults quite well. So, I think that is a fair assessment. When people ask about socialization of homeschool students, it really depends on the work that the parent is doing to make that possible for their child.
You know, it sounds like she is being provided such a rich educational experience. And again, I think it's one that people don't necessarily equate with the concept of homeschooling.
Right. Well, you know the word that I used earlier when I was talking about my undergrad experience, interdisciplinary, and how I approach things. Homeschooling, and the word that I used was curating, that when I majored in interdisciplinary studies, I was able to curate what it was that I studied. And I realized that that's very important to me, having ownership of what it is that you study, of what it is, just having this ability to curate, whether it's your playlist, your musical playlist, but just being able to have this ownership of your space and what it is that comes into your space. And homeschooling, if parents perceive it from this, I'm curating my child's education. It's not me only being the teacher all the time, but it's me finding those resources and getting to know who my child is to see where their interests lie. So many people believe that children are these empty vessels and that they don't have any type of innate skills or interests. In my experience parenting, I mean, because I knew it, I felt it when I was a child. I knew very early that the arts, that was me. I was a writer. I knew very early I was an actress. I knew very early that where my interests were. And, you know, my mother, you know, that was an area of a very high conflict between my mother, the mathematician, and her daughter, the artist. You know, like, what? Because sometimes she just did not understand where I was coming from. Like, what is this? But children are not these empty vessels. They need guidance, yes. They need direction oftentimes. But they also can provide us as adults with some type of insight into this human experience, especially those who have these skills very early on, or at least have this self-knowing, you know, once they come into our realm. So
it's very true.
Yeah.
Khadija, not that you don't have more than enough pieces of your puzzle that you're putting together. You're also on the editorial board of JUMP. Tell us what JUMP is.
The Journal of Underrepresented and Minority Progress is a new journal that will be debuting this year. We've been accepting submissions. I am a research assistant. I had mentioned briefly that I'm a doctoral student at Morgan State University in the Community College Leadership Program, and I work with two professors, Drs. Gali and Bista. They are the editors of this journal, and I serve as a production editor of the journal. And we are looking to continue or to expand the dialogue or to provide a space for the research, the narratives, the book reviews, just an academic space for work that looks at those people who are considered underrepresented or minorities, and not just here in the United States, but in other spaces around the world. And what that does, and we're aware, I think, of how a lot of times people who are not of white identity are often pathologized or looked at. Our experiences are not normalized or are not are looked at from a deficit approach, I should say. And so this journal kind of provides a space where those who are considered minority or the underrepresented on research around their experiences are presented in through a lens that is not of the deficit perspective. And so I'm very excited to be part of a team that is putting this out. And so our launch date keeps shifting, but people can learn more if they visit minorityprogress.org.
That's terrific. Khadijah, there is so much that you're doing. I'm going to ask you to give us the website again where people can learn more about you and be in touch as we close out our conversation today. That website address is?
Well, I would encourage people, the website that I want people to visit most of all is liberatednews.com. This is our 10th year in existence. I'm so excited. Yes, 10 years. And it just snuck up on me. And so in August, I am planning to have a festival in Washington, D.C. To commemorate 10 years of Liberated News, but also the work of small businesses and groups in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area that are doing prolific work helping the communities be better than they found them. And so if you stay tuned with us on liberatednews.com, you can learn about the different programming that's going to be part of that festival that people can be a part of.
Terrific. Khadijah Z. Ali Coleman, thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with the professional of your choosing. Mind Talk is available to you daily by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. You can also download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes or Google Play Store. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. I would love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk. So do send an email to me with your questions, your comments, anything you like. Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.